Dick dropped a dime in a vending machine, pulled the lever, and picked up a bag of jelly beans. Munching, he wandered back to the car and lounged there, watching the young attendant's efforts to rid the windshield of Kansas dust and the slime of battered insects. The attendant, whose name was James Spore, felt uneasy. Dick's eyes and sullen expression and Perry's strange, prolonged sojourn in the lavatory disturbed him. The next day, he reported to his employer, "We had some tough customers in here last night," but he did not think, then or for the longest while, to connect the visitors with the tragedy in Holcomb. Dick said, "Kinda slow around here." "Sure is," James Spore said. "You're the only body stopped here since 2 hours. Where are you coming from?"
"Kansas City."
"Here to hunt?"
"Just passing through."
"On our way to Arizona."
"We got jobs waiting there. Construction work."
"Any idea the mileage between here and Tucumcari, New Mexico?"
"Can't say I do."
$3.06. He accepted Dick's money, made change, and said, "You'll excuse me, sir? I'm doing a job. Putting a bumper on a truck." Dick waited, ate some jelly beans, impatiently gunned the motor, sounded the horn. Was it possible that he had misjudged Perry's character? That Perry, of all people, was suffering a sudden case of blood bubbles? A year ago, when they first encountered each other, he'd thought Perry a good guy, if a bit stuck on himself, sentimental, too much the dreamer. He had liked him but not considered him especially worth cultivating until one day, Perry described a murder, telling how, simply for the hell of it, he had killed a colored man in Las Vegas, beaten him to death with a bicycle chain. The anecdote elevated Dick's opinion of little Perry. He began to see more of him, and, like Willie J., though for dissimilar reasons, gradually decided that Perry possessed unusual and valuable qualities. Several murderers, or men who boasted of murder or their willingness to commit it, circulated inside Lansing. But Dick became convinced that Perry was that rarity, a natural killer. Absolutely sane, but conscienceless, and capable of dealing, with or without motive, the coldest-blooded death blows. It was Dick's theory that such a gift could, under his supervision, be profitably exploited. Having reached this conclusion, he had proceeded to woo Perry, flatter him. Pretend, for example, that he believed all the buried treasure stuff and shared his beachcomber yearnings and seaport longings, none of which appealed to Dick, who wanted a regular life with a business of his own, a house, a horse to ride, a new car, and plenty of blonde chicken. It was important, however, that Perry not suspect this. Not until Perry, with his gift, had helped further Dick's ambitions. But perhaps it was Dick who had miscalculated, been duped. If so, if it developed that Perry was, after all, only an ordinary punk, then the party was over. The months of planning were wasted. There was nothing to do but turn and go. It mustn't happen. Dick returned to the station. The door to the men's room was still bolted. He banged on it. "For Christ's sake, Perry!" "In a minute." "What's the matter? You sick?" Perry gripped the edge of the wash basin and hauled himself to a standing position. His legs trembled. The pain in his knees made him perspire. He wiped his face with a paper towel. He unlocked the door and said, "Okay, let's go."